SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Santa Anita, Breeders' Cup 2019, 24 hours out. A very good Thursday, race fan. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. It really now it feels like a trip to Santa Anita. And the reason is, sitting across from me with his oatmeal and fruit bowl, Rick Hammerly. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. It's dark wherever I get out, but I could finally make a left turn and say, hey, I'm at Santa Anita again. It's pretty cool.
Got your jacket on, your Santa Anita. You're both affiliations, Santa Anita and the Arizona hat.
Had to get the Arizona hat, got to spread the word, but I'm glad that it's nice and calm out here. As I was telling you, I'm 30 miles to the west where the winds, yeah. We had some fires. The fire closest to me was about 3 weeks ago, and that's luckily done. And now out by, when they're talking about the Reagan Library, that's about 10 miles further west of me. And a wind is, you have no idea what it's like in these winds. I mean, you can feel them and just imagine trying to fight a fire in it. But these guys do an unbelievable job, the day in, day out, year in, year out. So, I know I speak for Southern California. Thank you for all you do for us out here and keeping us safe. But it's great to look left and see these horses out here again, isn't it? It's still the greatest place in the world in the morning.
Well, and things have gotten more and more energetic as the week has gone on. Monday, Tuesday, it was a little subdued. And then yesterday, you could really, for the first time, people in town, and you got a sense. I think all the horsemen and their staffs and owners, I think, have all arrived at that point. And I think people looking forward to the next 72 hours.
I think you're right. I think they not only arrived, they settled. I know coming in for me, which I've come in this gate, you know, 1,000 times, and all of a sudden you see people and you go, what's he doing here? Oh, Jesus, the Breeders' Cup. And then you start feeling a little bit more. There's Jimmy V on the phone who'll be here momentarily, but we'll have to shut him off right now. But I tell you, you know what's wild? So I'm driving in here and I'm thinking to myself, what am I worried about? You know what I'm thinking for the first time? Where am I going to park? I've always had a spot. So luckily, I know a few people over there that could move a cone or two and get me in. But it's great to be back here at Clocker's Corner. It's great to see you, Steve, of course.
Well, and delighted to get these 2 days in with you. And I was going to ask you what Jimmy's status was, if he was going to be in by today or certainly by tomorrow, because I was with him at Antara at Far Hills. I got to see him. Couple of notes, you know, talk about the fire and talk about the horses. Did you see the video of the horse going to get his friend and their baby?
I did not.
It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable. He crosses over a fire line, goes behind a fence, and it goes in, and they're running toward him. They all turn and escort the foal. The weanling is running along next to him. It's a sensation all over the place. I'll forward you the link, and it's just really heartwarming and uplifting in and of itself. Want to mention from last night, before it gets too far afield and we really dive in, we got a very busy morning, as you'd expect, with Hammer here, Jimmy coming. We're going to check in with Dick Powell, get some Breeders' Cup opinions from him. Brad Free, who is going to be stationary today, he's doing some writing from home, so it'll be easy to reach Brad. We'll get his final thoughts, and I want to talk to Brad about the undercard and the other races, because, you know, it's funny. There's other races on these two cards, and if you bet on them, they pay money the same way that the Breeders' Cup races do.
The green stuff?
Yeah, same way.
It's
same
amazing.
Exact way.
And, you know, when you look at the...
and you tie, them, you tie
Friday,
them all together.
The pick, some of the pick fives and some of the horizontal bets run through them. So you better spend some time on them. And you mentioned Brad Freed. I wanted to mention in general... Now, normally I'm here for this stuff. Breeders' Cup and see everything going on. So I'm kind of catching up from the outside. And the coverage has been tremendous. And maybe it's tremendous every year. I don't see it. But starting from Brad Free and Jay and our, Steve, the local guys from the racing forum have been great. And TVG's put on a show in the mornings. I wake up, I look at that. Xbox TV's been showing works. Here comes Dan Ward. How are Dan. You, my man? Look at him.
It's, my last horse just got done. Look like, back to the
all right. Good.
I see my rider over.
Love it.
Good lucky, Dan.
Good luck, Dan.
Dan Ward, everybody.
But the coverage leading up, I mean, they've shown you, normally you have to go dig up for replays and workouts. So the information is in front of you. You just have to go out there and see it. And one thing that I saw, the program, the Breeders' Cup program, it's free.
Nice.
On the Breeders' Cup. Now, you have to find it. It's very tough to find.
Well, we'll find the link.
No, you find the link. But if here's what you do. The Breeders' Cup's on the Breeders' Cup site. It's kind of a tough site to maneuver to find it.
A little bit.
Google Breeders' Cup program 2019, and it'll take you to the link, and you can print the program for free for both days. It's
That's
amazing.
Great.
Fantastic.
That's good for them.
Hoping that's the start of something good.
I missed that.
Something
I didn't, even,
good.
I didn't no, see a press I, release or anything.
I didn't see a press release. I was putzing around, and there it is. Somebody told me.
Off the Equibase.
Actually, one of my students. I said, where'd you get that? How much did it cost? He goes, it's on the deal.
That's great. Good for them.
So, I mean, I hope it wasn't an inadvertent leave-up, but congratulations to them for doing that. And this is how we get people involved.
Free data is one of the hot topic, hot button topic issues out there. It's difficult. It's difficult because there's people that are taking the information that Equibase, the information systems that Jockey Club retains, and they're paying for access to it, and they're repackaging it for players, and that costs money, the staffs and the work that goes into it. It's such a tricky topic. We discussed it going back earlier this year with Pat Cummings. You've been involved with Pat and Craig Burnick.
Yes.
I'm going to have you not admonish, but remind everybody. This came up last night at the dinner, and I started to talk about last night's Turf Writers dinner, and congratulations, Craig, Caton Bradar, and Tim Wilkin. Joyce Scott, which was a wonderful award, and the late Rick Violette, and Wayne Lucas. And Wayne had back surgery, so he is unavailable. Otherwise, he'd be out here. And so we're going to honor the Turf Riders will honor and broadcasters will honor Wayne next year at Keeneland. So that was put off. But Caton, who won the Jim McKay, and Tim Wilkin, a longtime Capital District Turf Rider who does a fabulous job. Joyce Scott, the rider that was introduced by Julie Crone. And, of course, Rick Violette, whose contributions to the game and to the Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association in New York and nationally were invaluable and will be impossible to replace. And he's a hell of a horseman, too. His brother and sister were on hand, which was really touching and emotional, as you might expect. Caton was introduced by Donna Brothers, and a longtime colleague, and they've worked together many times. Tim Wilkin introduced by Jack Knowlton. And Jack's not here with the Saratoga 2-year-old, Tis the Law, but he came out for the festivities and to introduce Tim. And Andy Belfiore, who worked alongside Rick Violette for years and years, and was as close to him as, in fact, his brother and sister said, Andy was as close to Rick as they were. And she introduced Rick and the award that the recognition. So very nice night last night at the Derby. If I ever become an officer of NTWAB, I'll see about maybe bringing the whole thing down to the Dow, but to the Dalray, but or maybe Arroyo Chop House, which you love. So that was last night's festivities, and I did want to get it in. But I wanted you to remind everybody right off the bat, because it came up last night with Dave Grenig and Marcus Hirsch. The post position, just ignorance. Don't be put off. You say it all the time on any big day, and in particular, it can serve you well here.
Well, I obviously, you're probably talking about the outside posts involved here. Now, this isn't a day-to-day thing. When the rail here at Santa Anita is at zero, the post, I'm going to talk about on the turf, obviously. Look, at these horses are the best horses in the world in each division. They're well-meant. They're here to run. And the out, if you like a horse and he's in the 12, 13, 14 hole, do not toss it entirely because of the post position. I just want to make that clear. Now, yeah, it's not the greatest thing going on, and sometimes it takes an athletic-type horse. There's certain type horses that you can just automatically look, hey, this horse can maneuver
and
in.
Style, and stylistically, if it's a horse that's going to drop out of it anyway, who cares?
Yeah, it's a totally drop. It's a mid-packer, but you can see. All they got to do is slide in and get it into the three path by the first turn and then go from there. I've seen it too often. The big numbers show up. And just like anything, these horses are all well-meant, and do not let a single little thing like that deter it, because it will drive you crazy. And there's actually a few horses here that in my first go through that that filly of Aiden O'Brien's that we had girl Gina on last night, yesterday, that she was talking about, that Etoile in the 14 hole.
Yeah.
And I was looking for a reason to like the horse, and then now I have one because they really kind of explained after the layoff. So 14 hole, I'm thinking, great, that's probably 12-1 in the program, probably go up. So just don't let a small thing deter you, just like the rail. Same thing on the rail, you know. It's not the Derby where the rail is a death trap. Here it's not that bad. So do your handicapping, adjust, but don't toss because of a post position.
Well, I will reiterate that. And also, in advance of Johnny might stop by this morning. He got in yesterday, although his bag did not. And we'll get Johnny in, and we'll remind everybody.
Did you see his tweet?
Which one?
So Johnny sent a tweet out that Johnny D were talking about, that he lost his luggage and his hotel wasn't going to be ready for a couple hours. So he sent a picture. He said, so I think I might make a few changes.
He sent a
picture of the Scientology thing.
I saw that.
And I replied, I said, see you in 10 years on A&E.
Good job. Well, I want to remind everybody, it's Thursday. You might play today a little bit. There's some good action really all over the place. The annual reminder, fund your account today. Do not be waiting until 3 o'clock tomorrow and then fumbling around and find that there's something is fucked and you got a problem. I mean, if you fund with Green Dot or with any of the functions that it needs a little extra hoop jump, make sure you get that done today.
That's good advice. I've got one more other piece of, I call it a public service announcement, if you will.
PSA.
People coming in today, if you're landing at LAX, they have believe me, this airport's been trying for 30 years to catch up with Memphis. It's not, you will not see it in the top 10 of airports around. So they're doing a lot of construction. And what they've done is you can no longer take an Uber or a cab from the airport.
You can get there on Uber, but you can't get.
So
it's like a Roach Motel.
They don't pick up, but there's a crack there. But if you see a green bus going around, I landed yesterday and I was waiting for my regular ride. But there's a green bus you take to an auxiliary lot, which I'm sure is jammed, that you pick up Uber. But as Jimmy found out yesterday, because I was concerned about him, if you take Uber Luxury.
or the
SUV, they will let you in and take an Uber. You can take an Uber there. So check that out. Now, my advice as a seasoned traveler would be just jump on a hotel bus and get off at the hotel and then get your Uber from the hotel. So
not so dumb, huh?
So when you're coming in, if you think you're going to Uber, you might have to hit the L button. So it's a little crazy. Instead of picking up on the inside, they pick up on the outside. They just did all this switch, and it just started 2 days ago. And so Jimmy did it. I was there to witness it yesterday. It's kind of They're still getting the hang of it. So your usual hour wait for the baggage is going to add some more time.
Good. Not good.
So just be warned if you're coming in today or tomorrow.
Well done. Well done. The PSAs will continue. Any good advice that anybody has. And Jimmy, we were together a couple of weeks ago at Far Hills, and Jimmy sporting the Yankees cap, which does remind me that we should slip in the quick, condolences to Houston and environs and team run happy, who are a little probably unhappy. Only in baseball, honest to God, only in baseball does crazy stuff happen that has never happened in 125 years on such a regular basis. Seven straight road wins. It's the most
first time in history in any sporting event.
They play so many games, so eventually it's going to. It's like this. It's like our game. You think you see something until tomorrow, and you see something else. But that is amazing.
Too crazy.
It was
having a horse in the race, so to speak.
Unbelievable.
They
crazy.
You know, they had a good feel coming in. They were kind of pumped up.
They had the best record in baseball since.
Yeah. So they were 19-31. They were going to fire the manager and kept the head down, and, you know, good for them.
Just wanted to slip that in. And
got to do it.
Baseball season over.
Breeders' Cup season about to commence.
Right here, right now. We got...
What do we got going out, Jimmy? We got Secret Spice coming out after the Tractors. It looks like the Tractors are... together having a poker game here at the top of the stretch for a little bit.
I'm going to head back there to watch your
train. Nice.
Okay. We'll bring the crew back.
All right.
And say a few things.
Very good.
Have a good one.
All right.
Jimmy, of course.
Don't leave without me.
With the Bobby Flay runner. And maybe we can get an answer as to why they didn't more seriously consider the turn back for Secret Spice, which is something that we kind of thought that we thought they might. I should have probably asked. I forgot to ask what's his name yesterday, Billy Koch. Should have asked Billy. Jimmy, Billy was on yesterday, so you don't have to bring Billy back. Billy filled his quota. Yeah, exactly. You're representing. That's great. Hey, because Andy Serling and I were talking about the distaff and the Philly Mare Sprint too, and we couldn't. Secret Spice would have been a much better candidate, I thought, to turn back in the Philly Mare Sprint.
I kind of agree with you. I think Baltus has one in there.
Lady Ninja, who's very interesting. Nobody's said a word about.
I have a horse today that I found last night that I was telling Jimmy about that I haven't heard a word about. And I just kind of jumped off the page at me. And it just reminded me of another handicapping thing. In these races, handicap every single horse.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than having this horse go out. You go, who is that? And you look at it and you go, I didn't even look at this horse. Look at every horse. You might cross it off eventually, but look at every horse. They're all here to win. And I went by a horse yesterday, and I went back after looking at some numbers, and I was like, wait a minute, this horse is going to be all right in the mile. Kieran's horse.
Oh, Lukulin is absolutely lost.
Right?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I went back. I didn't have any marks on my – but I go, why did I go over this horse?
Uh-huh.
And now I'm starting to dig in a little bit. I mean
– I love it. Very good dig. I will not argue at all. In fact, you know, I was talking to Caleb Keller yesterday, and Todd Trupp came by, and this race came up for some reason, and Todd said he the same experience as he was kind of handicapping, and you know what part of it is, and we brought this up the other day after the pre-entries turned into full entries. You look at the pre-entries, and mentally, you make sort of a assumption that the horses that are on the outside aren't getting in. And so when you look at the race for the first pass, you have a certain set of expectations in terms of the field. And then when things start to change, some of the horses move around, and of course you've been involved, off and on with the committee for forever, you get horses that jump in, and it changes the complexion. At the very least, it's another face and another set of PPs to incorporate, and he drew beautifully for his up-close stalking trip in a field that is really kind of devoid of speed.
That's what it hit. That's what hit me too.
Yeah. And you got Luis Saez, who's terrific in that kind of setting.
Yeah, very gets him out of there. Good.
Excellent.
Horse is a win type and getting good at the right time. He go back in his PPs. He outran Brooks and Mortal in a Yoshida race a couple years ago. I mean, just to throw this stuff in, it's all starting to add up. I mean, lightly raced, obviously. He's 13 starts. He's a 5-year-old, but when he runs well. So that just kind of popped up as a horse I hadn't seen in a race that I haven't been able to grasp totally onto. It's always nice to come up with something to maybe work around.
That is absolutely a live concept, and I equated Le Coulin a little bit to La Hadoud when Kieran upset on the soft going from right down inside at a monster price. Speaking of Monmouth, by the way, I told the story. I don't know if I told the story yesterday. I guess I did. Ran into Ren Carruthers, and they were having trouble getting a set of PPs, final PPs, printed. And so I bring my printer around with me, and I volunteered to get him a set. I ended up printing two sets of PPs for them. And Matt came to pick them up, and I didn't realize that he did a stint at Monmouth that overlapped with you.
Yeah, we worked together at Monmouth. Matt came in, maybe a year, energetic young guy from Minnesota, and we became buddies since then. And then he went on, and that's when he started, on TVG. It's like, hey, I know that guy. And it went a weird story about Matt Carruthers. Somewhere in there, longtime family friends of my parents and of me. One of the daughters is married to Matt's nephew, and it's pretty funny. We were over there not too long before my parents passed, and had dinner, and I heard the name Carruthers, and the guy's a photographer, and I go, Carruthers? They go, horse racing? Do you know Matt? Oh yeah, he's my brother or something like that. And it's like, you got to be kidding me. And so, so we're closer than even that. But no, Matt was he's obviously does a wonderful job on TVG. I don't know Ren at all. Sounds like she's loads of fun.
She's a live wire. She is like a madcap. If there was a situation comedy, I yesterday I said she's like Lucy. I said to Scott Hazleton, she like Marlo Thomas or that girl, or she's okay. It seems like there's always mayhem tracking around wherever you run into Ren Carruthers.
Then that's a good match then. speaking of Monmouth, we were talking the other day about that Breeders' Cup at Monmouth, how turned from white to black weather-wise. It's just in an instant. It was so nice there for so long.
Oh, day after day. It was beautiful. 70 degrees, gorgeous day after day, and then it turned to hell.
anyway.
Hammer, let me tell you what we're going to do. Let's get get Dick Powell on the line. We'll get Dick's Breeders' Cup action, and then we'll turn to Brad Free. We'll bring Brad in as well over the next hour. I don't think we necessarily need to take a break. Maybe we'll take a top of the hour at 10 and then 11. We got to catch up at some point with Mike Welsh and get Mike's now with. There might be a few different flourishes here and there. Yeah, that's it. Go to the headset. Good call. There'll be some horses that have some blowouts down the lane kind of stuff. But the serious works are obviously done. So we'll get some thoughts from Mike on that front. And we are expecting Pete and Jonathan to swing through. Right, Pete and Jonathan later, and I'm not sure what time. They were a little late yesterday. They came way too late. Paul Matisse as well. We'll get to Paul. Tony is going to have to defer to tomorrow. Haskin and Schulman later. As well.
But I'll bump.
There you go.
One here, one there.
Yep. The home and away. And Jay Pribman will close out the morning with probably the last segment. Dick Powell, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Lucky you being out there in the sunshine and it's raining back here.
Well, that's one thing generally. Well, I can't say in my travels here all the time, there's been a few springs. There's been a couple of big cap days and Santa Anita Derby days where it was very wet. I got the photographs whenever I look through my Santa Anita Rotog Reviewer. I see those days where the buglers are in yellow slickers it's a funny environment. But
it does rain in Southern California.
Yeah, it does. It's been the cause of great consternation actually. Dick, you know, one quick aside, because I told everybody about last night's Turf Riders dinner, and you've got to know Tim Wilkin from the start of his career.
Well, I got involved professionally in 1988, and Tim was around then with Matt Graves. So, I've been working in and around with Tim since 88, see him all the time at the track, see him sometimes in the off season. He's a covers basketball for the Times Union and does lots of other things for them. So, that was a nice honor for him last night. And I've never been able to make that dinner because even when I go to the Breeders' Cup, I usually would get in too late to make the dinner. So maybe one year I'll show up.
Well, the Walter Haight Award to Tim Wilkin. I've got to get Tim on, actually. That's an overdue pleasure for everybody because he's terrific and he has that great heritage that includes Tim Layden and others that kind of bubbled up out of the Capital District. Dick, let's very quickly, Dick. We don't need real specifics, but just give everybody a top line on HKJC from last week and this weekend.
Sunday we had all weather racing at Shotton. The trend kind of came back where you needed to be forwardly placed. The first two races went gate to wire. The other races, with one exception, were close stalkers. So that trend seems to be there, especially when the all-weather track is dry. Nice mix of winners and long shots. Yesterday at Happy Valley, there were eight turf races, and the prices were amazing. There was a favorite. It went off at $10.40, and everything else was 6-1, 8-1. Longest price on the board was 10-1. So you had one favorite out of eight, but they all paid very high single-digit odds. Really good racing there. This coming Sunday, we have the Ladies' Purse. This is a Group 3, 1,800 meters on the turf, and many of these horses will go on to show up on International Day on December 8th. And I'm going to try to pull off a bit of an upset hit with Dark Dream, number 4. The favorite's going to be number 1, Exalted, who was a Group 1 winner last year. In fact, he won the Hong Kong Jazz, I think it was, last year. But I think Dark Dream's coming back off the same layoff, and we'll see if he can get the jump out of them. I guess their season's going on Sunday at Shot 10. But good race in the last 2 days. Ja Morrell continues to lead the riders. Zach Purton, second. Karis Keaton, third. Danny Shum continues to lead the trainer.
Very good. Well, let's turn our attention to the weekend. And, Dick, I don't know how much you were able to listen yesterday, but we were very international heavy between the visit from Kelly Riley, who you think highly of, and then, of course, later in the show in hour three. I mean, her voluminous report and her exhaustive research, and, she doesn't want to leave any detail, unfound or unreported, and I've received a ton of positive feedback to Kelly. And then late, how about Gina Bryce for the first time on the show from At the Races and Sky Sports in the UK? She was terrific with the always fabulous Nick Luck. And so I thought we had a pretty comprehensive international look yesterday. I know it's one of your favorite areas when it comes to the three big turf races on Saturday. the three long distance races on the grass, and now we got the Juvies. Any international horses that you've got a particular interest in, and then we'll talk about some of the main track opportunities.
Well, the form line that's interesting is anyone who came out of a race against Pinatubo, who was the dominant two-year in Europe and has actually been higher rated than Frankel was at this point in his career. So, unfortunately, and I know Rick just made the point about the don't get too scared off by the posts, and I'm always guilty of that. But Arizona had been in against Pinatubo, didn't run bad, and that's a good form line to have. I like Rick's advice about the posts, because you just go back in the history of the Breeders' Cup. I can't count how many 14 horses won, you know, coming from the extreme outside, including Lur. When Lur won his second Breeders' Cup mile, he drew 14, and Mike Smith had to put the pedal down and just gun him. So the Europeans seem to be pretty versatile. Santa Anita is a little bit better than Belmar. I thought Belmar was a little claustrophobic to some of the European young horses. They came out of the track, a couple of them really melted down. Didn't like having a pony around. So Santa Anita is just a different vibe for them, and they all seem to acclimate very well. I was kind of surprised. There wasn't a lot of listening yesterday. Anthony Van Dyke, who has been pointed for this race since winning the Epsom Derby, didn't really get everyone's motors going too much, but he has tactical speed, and he'll certainly get the mile and a half. And he's an interesting one that we'll see where the money goes. I think the hardest thing to predict is forget about predicting the winner of the race. Some of these horses just predict what the prices are going to be, who's going to be the favorite, because we're usually almost wrong about stuff like that. But, you know, the Europeans are always tough. I don't think this is the greatest contingent of Europeans sent over. We'll find that if I'm right on Saturday and Friday. So a lot of times I'll give them a big edge over the domestic horses. But this year, I don't really think that's the case. Chad has two monster horses that are willing to take on anyone and have taken on international rivals. So, yeah.
You know, Dick, you bring up a point about the European contingent. I have a habit, like you, of a turf race. I immediately turn to the Europeans and start there and then, you know, think about our horses second and third. And you also mentioned that the contingent doesn't look like top flight. And I think, if you go back, I think we've said that for the last few years. And sometimes we get caught because what I learned when I was here, and we had the Breeders' Cup back-to-back in 8 and 9, and then we had it here for 3 years, the 12, 13, and 14. And I kept hearing, oh, man, the Europeans, they're not going to like that. Au contraire, they like it because they know what they're getting.
Yep.
So when they come here, it's not, oh, geez, do I bring it? Is it going to be soft? Is it gonna... No, here's what you're going to get. You're going to get a turf course that is going to be firm. Has a nice little give to it, though. You can get into it a little bit, but they know what they're bringing. So maybe the horses that are sent here to run on a firm track that they think they're going to like, a firm track that maybe they haven't seen over there, and maybe some of the better runners are used to soft and looking for a little bit more given the ground that they're not going to get. So they don't want to bring the quote top flight. But the horses that they do send, they know what they're running on here, so they might show a little bit of improvement on this type of surface. But I agree with you, at the first look, it's like, wow, you know, you're looking at horses that have run second and third in some of these stakes. It's like, well, where's the winners of these races over here? But, you know, maybe they prefer it a little softer. So keep that in mind, that these horses are well-meant, and maybe they're seeing ground like this they don't see very often, and these top trainers that are sending them over here are going, I think these guys are going to like this ground.
And many of them have American-type pedigrees, so it's not like the old days with European pedigrees, which were really stamina-oriented, and, you know, they couldn't handle the quickness of our races. Now that doesn't seem to be a problem. Aidan O'Brien's learned you got to get horses out of the gate. That one Breeders' Cup at Lone Star, I think every single one of his horses broke poorly. They ran well, but they didn't win because they weren't getting out of the gate. That's not the case anymore. They all seem to come flying out, so... I think the firm turf is a great point because it is predictable. It's not like we have to wonder if we're going to get firm turf. We're going to have firm. They know it. We know it. Jocks know it. And also, these jockeys now, Ryan Moore and the major riders over there, Frankie, they go all over the world. This is not that big a leap to come to America and ride at Santa Anita. They've done it before. They've excelled at it before. And I think they fit right in. I think the first-time Lasix is a factor with many of them, with Arizona. Clearly, she gets first-time Lasix after running two lengths behind Pinatubo. That's enough for me. I don't need to see much more than that.
Interesting. And she, yep.
And she's been running on soft ground and heavy ground, and now she gets firm ground, which over there is usually called good. So she's won on good. Now she gets the ground she wants. She has Ryan Moore. She'll have to get a trip, but post 12 means you're clear. You're not bottled up and stuck in traffic.
What else, Dick? Pick a couple of other spots.
Well, I did four races for Twin Spires, which are available on twinspires.com/news. I'll just work my way backwards. And the classic, I like Code of Honor. And it's funny because I was not a fan of his earlier in the year. I always expected Shug to come off a loss and say, we're going to try turf because he was certainly bred for it. And yet he kept excelling. I thought his Derby was way better than people give him credit for. He was not interfered with at the top of the stretch. But after Louis did the incident involving the other horses, he then ducked back to the inside where Johnny was on Code of Honor. Kind of took away his momentum a little bit. I thought he ran fine through the stretch. I love how Shug backed off, went to the one-turn mile in the Dwyer. Big finish that day. And also remember, this is May 23rd pole. So these races were going to be tough for him anyway. Now he's matured. His Travers was brilliant. His Jockey Club Gold Cup was excellent. And now he shows up for another mile and a quarter race. The outside post, no problem. Long run into the first turn. He's not going to be involved early anyway. I'm a little worried about the pace because I don't know really how much pace we're going to have with Mongolian Groom and Dino Rosso. Couple of the others might go, but I don't think you're going to see the normal California pace. But I just think Code of Honor just keeps improving, and he'll be able to run his race back, where some of the others, I'm not confident that they can run their A game again. And Shug is just a master at getting horses good and keeping them good. So that's my pick in the classic. And then with Bigstaff, there's kind of a trend going on, and I read Jerry Brown stuff last night after I made my picks. Then I looked at other people's analysis. Jerry's all down on the horses that did not go out there earlier, did not have any experience at Santa Anita. I'm kind of the opposite. I don't think this is your father's Santa Anita race course anymore. This is kind of a deep, tiring track. It's similar to Keeneland. This meets Keeneland especially. And I think it's similar to Belmont Park, that it's not the paved highway that we were always used to getting out there. So in the Distaff, I like Chad. I like Dunbar Roads. Mile and a quarter for him, I think, is going to be real important to get 9 furlongs on a tiring track. The Spinster was anybody's race, and she was stuck down in the inside. She's a big, long-striding horse. That was not the place to be, and that's just where she ran, where she wound up from post one. Now she gets Jose, Castellano gets off, Jose gets back on, and he had been riding her before. And I just think from post five, and if the track is not stone cold speed, I think she'll be coming and coming hard. So I'm going to try to beat Midnight Be Soon with number 5, Dunbar Road, in the Distaff. And that's going to be a trend. You got to watch the beginning on Friday. And how are the East Coast
very much
doing? How are the Midwest horses doing? How's speed doing? How's the rail doing? All those interesting fact is that, unfortunately, when you pick early, you're kind of guessing. But Rick could back the way in on this. I mean, the track is noticeably slower. We've seen stake times 3-4 seconds.
No doubt.
Slower than we would normally get.
You're 100% right there. And let me throw this in also. I believe, knowing Dennis Moore, as I do, one of the best guys I've ever worked with as far as the track, He's not one of these guys that
cooks it
for the, hey, let's see what we can do for the big day.
Yeah, exactly.
What you see today, what you see tomorrow, you're going to see for the Breeders' Cup. So you're right, Dick. I watch a few races today. Today's Thursday, right? We're running today. So I'd watch a few races today just to get a feel. You're not going to see a whole lot difference into Friday and into Saturday. He's not one of those guys, so keep that in mind. But I do agree with you. You want to watch some of the earlier races on Friday to see how it goes. There's a couple 7 furlong races, I believe, that day, just to get a handle on how things are going. But you hit it right. It's not your father's racetrack here. No way.
Got a few races?
Let me see. On Friday, the juvenile race, we went with okay. In the juvenile filly, I went with Wicked Whisper. I thought a Saratoga win was tremendous because even though she was on the lead, her pace figures were fantastic. Just kept drawing off while running on the front end. Then she came back into the Vizette. I understand it's a one-turn race. But she set a blistering pace that day and showed no sign of weakness in the stretch, winning by 2 3/4. Now she gets 2 turns. She's by Liam's map out of a Bernardini mare, so the pedigree's certainly there. Has to be some dust-taking horses out there early, so if you're worried about acclimating, you don't have to worry about that with her. And I just think Wicked Whisper can make the lead if Joelle wants to, but that sprint race where she went wide to wide, I thought she just showed tremendous cruising speed, which she will need to get through turns. So I went Wicked Whisper over British Idiom and the juvenile filly. And then in the juvenile, I went with Dennis's Moment. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's just out of this world. And he is a running freak. And with Maxfield out, basically down to 2 star horses, 8 Ranger, maybe Eddie Keneally splitting those 2 up. But I just think Dennis's Moment from the rail. And the last race in the Iroquois didn't have to make the lead. Actually sat and settled real nice and finished full of run. The final margin was a little deceptive because Irada kind of shut him down in the stretch and Scabbard was making up a few lengths during that period. But Dennis's Moment just looks like an emerging star, and he has pedigree, not a sprint pedigree that eventually is going to hit the bottom. He's bred to keep doing this.
Well, and that's what was so notable early in the year at when he debuted, and of course had the heel clip incident, but the fact that he was so precocious and so light on his feet for a big horse early in his 2-year-old season, that's what's been really notable. I mean, every indication is that, you know, as the distances stretch and as added maturity comes his way, I mean, a scary talent. And you know what's funny is people are so used to Dale Roman's lauding all of his prospects that people kind of shrug, Dick, about, yeah, okay, it's here's the next great Dale Roman's 2-year-old. But so I think people have had to see it up close for themselves and seeing him physically, watching him, watching the works. If you're far flung and away from here or from Kentucky, he's impressive. He's very, very impressive. So, yeah, it could be. When they say special, this may really apply. I agree that he, especially after the rather unsightly work by 8 Rings the other day that had a few warts on it, I think Dennis's Moment has really, kind of flexed his buzz muscles.
Yeah, he's the real deal. And we'll see it Saturday, and it'd be a lot of fun to have Dale back on the Triple Crown Trail.
Big time, big time. Well, Dick, I appreciate it. We'll do some recapping next week.
Yes, definitely. A lot to talk about.
Without a doubt. Dick Powell, everybody, and read the written analysis and those selections are at the Twin Spires blog roll. We'll stay right here, and Brad Free is going to join us last night, of course, at the Derby for the Turf Rider and Broadcaster award banquet. And this morning, Rick Hammerly's with us. Brad, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Steve Hammer. How's it going? That was a really nice event last night to honor the late Rick Violet, Dwayne Lucas, Tim Wilkin, Kate and Bradar, and Joy Scott all picked up awards, well-deserving, in a very nice event at the Derby right down the street from Santa Anita.
Well, and appreciate the opportunity to get final thoughts from you. And in particular, I said to Hammer earlier when running down the lineup, Brad, I wanted to talk not just about the obvious, the 14 races and some of the best spots in your mind, but also about the undercards, because the Golden State Juvenile races on Friday, the Twilight Derby on Saturday, that nightcap tomorrow is an absolute crapshoot. I've got horses that I picked that are 10 to 1, 12 to 1, 15 to 1. There's some very lucrative spots, and especially that nightcap actually tomorrow, which finishes the last pick four. And of course, Dennis's moment and Eight Rings might be, narrow spots. Talk a little bit about the undercards before we get into Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we can talk about the last race on Friday. I had the same dilemma as you, Steve, and just going through this and wondering, which one of these one-of-the-van sprinters is going to get the job done. And interestingly, I settled on a 10-to-1 shot, and I'm going to be betting on this horse, and his name is Secret Courier. And he's shortening up from a route to a sprint. His speed figures are very ordinary. His top buyer speed figure is 81. And that's not going to get it done in a one other than sprint. But here's the deal about Secret Courier. He's been setting or pressing unbelievably quick fractions going two turns. And on Friday, he cuts back to 7/8. So, I mean, I love that. I use Tom Brohammer's pace and speed figures, and have been doing that for perhaps the last 15 years. And the Brohammer pace figures that Secret Courier has been earning in his last three starts suggest that this turnback is going to be ideal. I think I'm going to get a price because his final times are not that great, but I like Secret Courier on the turnback going 7 furlongs. It's a distance we've only seen a couple times this fall at Santa Anita, but it's a very interesting finale. And if you're stuck going into the last race, it's the perfect get-out race because you're going to get a price on whoever you settle on. I do like Secret Courier, trained by Brian Corner, Aaron Greider aboard, and he's turning back, and I like him at a big number.
There's a couple of horses in here that are doing interesting things, like Parsimony, who took forever to break the maiden for Doug O'Neill. And, sometimes once that horse figures out that he gets to go get his picture taken, the funny things happen. And so here he is, first time facing winners, although he faced plenty of winners when he was running over his head early in his career. I thought he was interesting. That Ragolo from Down Inside, I thought it needed to be seriously considered. I'm going to be very narrow when it comes to the juvenile, and so I'm going to spread. I want to use 4, 5, or 6 horses in that anchor leg of the pick four. Talk about the two Golden State juvenile races, because I thought there were a couple of interesting prices in there, too. What'd you do?
Yeah, I totally agree, and I'm flipping through my past performances to race three on Friday. And that's the Philly race. And Clubhouse Ride, I'm sure that everybody knows by now, is emerging as a premier California sire. And one of the, perhaps the best mare that he's been bred to so far is a grade one winner by the name of Warren's Vanita. And I bring up the pedigree because number four, Warren's Showtime, a daughter of Clubhouse Ride and the first foal produced by grade one winner Warren's Vanita, trained by Craig Lewis, who trained the sire, he trained the dam, and Warren Showtime, that was the highlight of the fall meet for myself. I was lucky enough to be on Warren Showtime at 35-1 in the Surfer Girl last time out. She's cutting back to 7 furlongs. They thought about the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies turf, but after cooler minds, finally decided that the 7/8 against Cowbreds was better than taking on the East Coast and European grass fillies in the Breeders' Cup. So I like Warren Showtime on the cutback from a mile on grass to 7 furlongs on the main track. And she's listed at 4-1 in what looks to be a wide-open race. Been studying her is the 5-2 favorite. The more I look at the Grade 1 Chandelier that was won by Baston with Conical finishing second, the less I like that race. That's the race that Ben studying her is dropping out of. So I think we have a potentially dubious morning line favorite. Warren Showtime on the cutback, to me, is the right horse. And then, of course, Bulletproof One, who I think wants to run in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint.
Yeah.
She's the second choice on the morning line in the Golden State. But I do like Warren Showtime. I mean, these clubhouse rides are unbelievable right now. And this is a very good filly who can do anything. She can sprint, she can route, she can grass, she can dirt. And 4-1 is a square price on Warren Showtime.
Let me throw one out here. And good morning, Brad. Good to see you. I was hoping to see you. But
tomorrow.
I'll see you tomorrow. But miss seeing you in the mornings and getting your phone calls and talking about things. But one more horse in here that intrigued me, and this has got Jeff Bondy written all over. It's what he does. The outside horse, Smiling Shirley. Nice price. Got Rosario jumps on. Breaks are made and fine. Comes back and runs decent in a stake. Takes a little bit of a break. Going 7/8. Jeff wins a lot of these cowbred type races. And don't overlook Smiling Shirley on the outside. I like the post. I just like the way this horse is setting up, and I know Jeff, this is what he points to. So,
And she also runs well fresh. I mean, she won her career debut at Del Mar, came back kind of a little, I don't know if it's disappointing because she was 13-1 in the generous portion, and she did finish third, but I don't know. It will depend on how much improvement she has in her, and she'll need to run faster than she did in August. We're in November. It's two-year-olds, and so you would expect her to improve. Great post, lots of options, top jockey aboard. I wouldn't talk anybody off of that choice, Hammer. 8-1 on Smiling Shirley. Sure, she's got a big shot.
Well, and there's also a Bondy horse from the outside in the boys' version, Shady Empire, coming off a freshening that I thought was a little dangerous at a huge price and got a very big push from the Friday Clockers Report, which is available now. Mike Welch told you last week when we talked that they would be out a good 24 hours earlier, so the Saturday Clockers Report will be available today. But the Friday, if you haven't checked yet, it's available now. And Shady Empire got a nice write-up. The horse that I ended up picking in this juvenile, though, Great Ulysses. I love a situation like this where a horse comes to town that's been facing open company, Brad Cox, and 8-1, that's me.
Well, you don't see too many cowbreds, running at Keeneland and running well in an allowance race, and what turned out to be a productive allowance race as well. That's Great Ulysses with blinkers on and, I guess, presumably dropping in class from allowance against open into a cowbred race. And that colt is listed at 8-1. Shady Empire, you mentioned him at the top. Boy, that would blow up the board. I can't see this horse unless he's a better colt than he was at Del Mar. Maybe the workout suggests that he is. His numbers are not that great. He is a front runner in a race that seems to be just loaded with speed. Tap Back is quick, Dapper's quick, Doc Tommy, Rookie Mistake. Looks like there's a whole lot of gas in this race. To me, the top choice, based mostly just on raw ability, is number 2, Cali Dude, another clubhouse ride horse, gelding, who ran super first time out. He's being asked a tall order because he's down inside in a race with a lot of speed. He looks like he's going to have to be up on or near the front end. But Cali Dude, to me, is the horse to beat. But once again, there's a long shot in here that I do like and will be wagering on. And I've been waiting for this horse ever since he finished 6th in the Zuma Beach. And I'm referring to number 1, Club Aspen, who is 15-1 on the morning line and will be every bit that number. He's going to get outrun early coming out of that route race, which is fine, because like I said, this race is loaded with speed, and I think he'll drop out and he'll make a run. Trainer Craig Lewis is having an unbelievable season, and Club Aspen ran a lot better than the line looks last time out. He was in a tough spot all the way around, never comfortable, pulled hard, unrelaxed, traffic to his left, to his right, in front of him, and he never really gave it up. He just kind of went evenly through the lane. It was a better-than look next-to-last place finish. Just like his stablemate, Warren Showtime, in the preceding race, Club Aspen goes turf route to dirt sprint. He's going to be coming late at a big number in a race that, to me, has pace meltdown written all over it.
All right. I've got it's these great, these cowbred races, because everybody sees something else. But Brad's analysis of Club Aspen is right on. I'd love to see these guys that have tried going long and then taking that step back, and I think that'll help him. So you mentioned Cali Dude, which obviously I like as the best figure going into the race.
Yep.
The maiden from Mark Glatt that finished second to Cali Dude, Chipper, is in here.
Yep.
Now, if you go back, the number seven horse, and he's 8-1, got pinned on the rail, had some problems, hung on, finished second, draws a little bit better today on the outside. Mark Glatt's been running a little bit of a roll here lately.
For a year.
But last week or so, I think he had a three-bagger one day. Anyway, keep your eye on this horse. That's one of those ones I noticed on the film. Actually got a pretty good number out of that race. Draws better. So look at that one. And you mentioned the great Ulysses horse. As you're going up and down and you go, wow, I don't know this horse. Brad Cox, what's he doing with it?
Exactly.
I was thinking this might be a one-way trip. I guarantee you. He's getting a few offers for this horse from some California people going, hey,
we'll keep the sale sign on it.
I don't know if Calumet Farm would want to sell, though.
I did see that, but still, a nice cowbred out here, you can make a lot of money with, and it sure looks like Great Ulysses might fit that bill.
Absolutely. Hammer, you mentioned Chipper. I put Chipper on the Daily Racing Form Horses to Watch list after that debut. That was an excellent first start for a two-year-old colt that does have plenty of ability. Street Boss Gelding, actually, Chipper, and he goes from the rail out to post seven, and he can come from behind, and he ran well, and the barn is hot. So another contender in a race with many contenders. It's great to see these huge fields of two-year-old cowbreds. Gives you a little bit of hope that maybe there's some, going to see some good two-year-olds later in the year and turn in three next year.
Well, years ago when the Breeders' Cup, I think we started this maybe in 8 and 9, when back then we didn't have as many Breeders' Cup races, we had more races to fill, and we had to come up with some races to use, and we needed dirt races. So I figured, let's put these races on the big day, and I guarantee if they were 2 weeks ago, they'd be sixes and sevens. So we said, let's highlight some cowbreds on the big day, let the people see them. 7/8 is kind of a distance that they haven't run before, and you know what? The owners want to be involved. Guess what? You run a horse at Breeders' Cup Day, you get a ticket for the day. So it's really worked out over the years. We've had some big fields. I think the one where we actually had a couple of bombs in one of these, and we had a carryover in the early pick five onto the next one. So they've really worked out. The cowbred people have over the years shown that they've appreciated being on the big day. So it is good to see.
Well, it's good to see a racing secretary like yourself, Hammer, using some creativity and putting these races up in the right spot. I was thinking about you last weekend because I remember a conversation that you and I had a couple years ago when you were at Santa Anita. We were talking, I think, about the Autumn Miss. And I'm not a racing secretary. I made some silly remark like, holy cow, this Autumn Miss, it gets a giant field every year. Why don't you go ahead and raise the purse? And I think the reaction was, well, there's really no reason to raise the purse. If we're getting 12 horse fields every year in that 3-year-old grass mile, why should we? It's turned out to be a terrific race, the Autumn Miss, and that was one of the reasons why Keeper of the Stars last week was able to go off at 5-1, in which he probably should have been half that number. So, yeah, I like these big races.
It's one of those weird dynamics, Brad. I guarantee if you made that race 300,000, you'd get a 6 or 7 horse field.
Well, because you would get some Chad Brown shows up.
Right.
That's going to be 6-5 or 4-5, and it scares everybody off.
You don't want that. I mean,
100,000
for a
black
nice,
type.
Yeah, it's and it gives everybody a shot, and everybody feels like they have a shot going in.
Well, and don't forget,
they did.
And every year, I think it's shown that.
Well, and when it comes to the fillies and mares, they're not just running for the 100,000. they're running for black type that is going to increase the value to the owner. And so the $100,000, okay, the cash is nice, but it's not going to be as much as the residual value when you go to breeder and when you go to sell the babies down the road or when you sell her in the November sales. And so the $100,000 for fillies and mares is kind of a mirage. It's worth a lot more.
100%. And once again, if this race were elevated to a grade two, you would have to make the race 200, and maybe you'd make it 250. And once again, you're going to get that one superstar out there, or the ones that everybody's afraid of, and you're gonna get a seven horse field. So sometimes the lower the price, the bigger the purse. It's just it's amazing, that dynamic. And it's all about placement most of the time.
Well, we're trying to place a loose horse that's coming the wrong way, apparently. And you have a lot of Breeders' Cup horses out. In fact, here's a pair of Baffert's. Well, now that are actually breaking off. Now they're gonna basically abort their work.
There have been so many horses getting loose over the last couple weeks in the mornings at Santa Anita that I just mind-boggling. I'm not quite sure what's going on. Unfortunately, there's been no incidents that I'm aware of, but it seems like every morning there's a loose horse going the wrong way. You hear the siren go off and you just cringe. So hopefully that horse ends up back at the barn and everything goes okay.
The best was yesterday. There was one that got loose on the training track, and it instead of being one of those, you know, open mouth screaming, running, scaring the hell out of everybody, I think it looked like a filly to me. She kind of cantered around and went directly to the outrider and said, "Take me home." It was great.
I think that was late morning yesterday.
Yes, yeah. It was hysterical. It was like, come on. Where'd my rider go?
Well, you sure don't see that too often. The siren is off and the red light is off, good. And with the headphones here, you can't hear, but what we started 4, 5, 6 years ago here, and we mentioned it whenever we're here, it seems like, the clockers upstairs.
And they get on the mic.
They hit the button. And then they get on the mic, and we've got them calmly say, okay, half mile pole, horse going the wrong way.
Yep.
So everybody can hear what's going on, and they can adjust accordingly out there.
And pass the word around.
And pass the word around, because there's nothing more frightening than hearing that siren, hearing the siren, seeing the red light go around, and everyone, you just start scanning slowly. Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? And if we're up in the grandstand doing that, you know these riders out here are want to know where everything is too. So the vocal, the audio telling people where it is on the track, and they're not telling us, they're telling the people on the track where the incident is. It really helps. I know other tracks have adopted that. I remember Tony Black heard that, and he goes,
Did you hear it over during a show from Churchill or from someplace they were doing it? Somebody heard it on the show and spread it around to another track. I forget what the daisy chain that created. Brad Freeze with us. And Brad, before we talk about Saturday's action, let's get a rundown of the juveniles. How do you approach these juvenile races with the concentration now of Future Star Friday?
Well, let's just talk about the two dirt races. And to me, the juvenile fillies is an absolute head scratcher. And I picked a filly that I never thought I would pick a horse like this in a race like this. She's a second time starter, but Donna Veloce was quite spectacular first time out. Now she's also had a speed bias in her favor. She's going long against winners and trying to win the Breeders' Cup in the second start of her career, and she's 3-1. So from a gambling perspective, I can't bet on my top selection. Having said that, is there anybody in here who you can really like? And there's not. To me, the juvenile fillies this year is one of the most inscrutable races. Maybe Donna Veloce runs back to her big figure and dominates going long for the first time, but that's a tall ask, two turns against winners in the Breeders' Cup. So to me, it's, if you're playing horizontals, you just got to buy the race. I mean, I can just see something wacky happening in this race. Maybe like a KP Dreamin', who seems to be improving. It's an absolute head-scratcher, and I'll also be very curious to see how these out-of-town horses run on the main track, because this is a slow, deep, tiring track, assuming it's going to stay the same this week. And I think that for a lot of these shippers coming in late, it's going to be culture shock. So to me, the Juvenile Fillies is an absolute head-scratcher. Now, jump ahead to the Juvenile, race 9 on Friday. You guys talked about Dennis's moment earlier, and I agree with everything that you said. This horse is good. He's shipped in early enough to get his final workout over the track. Dale Romans did the same thing a few years ago with Not This Time, worked well over the track, ran a winning race in the Breeders' Cup. Dennis's moment is a star in the making. I'm not as pessimistic on 8 rings as perhaps other people are with, you know, the substandard workout, apparently. But there is a long shot in this race that I will be backing, and I'm going to try to get him into the exacta with one of the two favorites. Number 3, Shoplifted. He shipped out here early for trainer Steve Asmussen, and his race in the Grade 1 American Pharoah, he finished 5th of 9. You got to go back and watch the tape, because he did something in the race that's very tough to do for any horse, and specifically a 2-year-old running long for the first time. He dropped out early. He was caught wide, okay. But he unleashed an eye-catching move from the half to the quarter pole through the far turn, and then he just kind of flattened out. It was a much better-than-look 5th-place finish by a horse who it's kind of tough to make a case for. He's not as fast as Dennis's moment or 8 rings, but he's been here a month. He has a race over the track that was a lot better than it looks. And I'm looking forward to Shoplifted outrunning his odds. I don't know if he's good enough to defeat the two favorites, but I'm relatively confident as you can be in a 20-to-1 shot, that Shoplifted is going to run a big race on Friday, and I think he'll outrun his odds.
You know, you mentioned KP Dreamin, who just went by about 7-8 minutes ago, and the last several years, ever since a Churchill Breeders' Cup, where I talked to Kenny Kirchner about how he bets Breeders' Cups, Brad, and he talked about his reverse tri-key concept, taking a deep closer or even a moderate closer that is going to be a big price, that is going to be running late and doesn't necessarily feel like a win candidate, but a horse that is going to hit the board. And when you thumb through the 35 Breeders' Cups and look at third-place finishers, you find a lot of big, bulky prices like that are running late. And KP Dreamin is my reverse tri-key horse in a short field, really. And I usually reserve the reverse tri-key plays for bigger, bulkier fields, like the Juvenile Turf races, etc., and the Mile and so forth. But for a moderate 9-horse field, I thought KP Dreamin was the right kind of underneath play like that.
Well, I agree with you, Stephen, and I'm glad that you brought up the wagering strategy with regards to a small field. I'm not interested in a trifecta in a 9-horse field, similar to what you just said. If it's going to be a small field, you're not going to get a giant payoff in the try, and that's one reason why in the Juvenile we're down to a field of 8, and maybe I'm right about Shoplifted, and he runs well but finishes 3rd behind the 2 favorites. Big deal. I don't need a $30 trifecta payoff in the Breeders' Cup. So that's why I'm going to insist on Shoplifted finishing 2nd in that 8-horse field. I'll take an exacta in a small field with a long shot. But a trifecta, I agree with what you just said. Those types of wagers, to me, should be reserved for big fields where if you happen to be right, you make a killing. You can't make a trifecta killing in a 9-horse field like the Juvenile Fillies or an 8-horse field like the Juvenile. So I'll settle for the exacta. It's not quite as sexy as a try, but in these smaller-sized fields, that's what I'd go for.
Well, you know, Brad, your observation of the Philly race is actually spot on from the Express Bet Wagering Guide. They have a stat in here. 5 of the 6 last Juvenile Philly races paid double digits, averaging $52. And the 3 horses, the last 3 fillies that ran here at Santa Anita in the Breeders' Cup filly race, Re Antonia, $66, Take Charge Brandy, $125, Champagne Room in 2016, $69. So you're on the right track. If there's ever a race that historically has paid boxcars, this is it. And you mentioned Donna Veloce, and I'm thinking, you know what? I was thinking the other day, I said, you know, I actually was there for the race, and it was visually impressive, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked at the price. I thought, you know, yeah. I didn't see 3-1 on the program. I thought, yeah, 7-1, I mean 6-1, something like that, maybe 8-1. And I opened up and went, oh my gosh, I can't bet on that horse now. It was crazy.
She actually made 3-5 look like a generous price,
right?
In hindsight, which is ridiculous on a first-time starter. The word was out on Donna Veloce a while back. She's an Uncle Mo that they paid a lot of money for and had done everything right in the morning. She drew perfectly near the outside in her career debut. And the track that day, one of the infrequent speed biases, I shouldn't say infrequent, but it was a speed bias that day. She had advantageous conditions, trained well going in, and ran accordingly over perhaps a little bit of a modest field. But it was visually impressive. The number was good. She's returned with back-to-back bullet workouts. This is a two-year-old filly at a meet that we've had plenty of top horses working over this racetrack, and here's a two-year-old filly with back-to-back bullet workouts, best of 44 and best of 27. So the ability is there. The raw talent is there. What she doesn't have is seasoning and experience around two turns. Maybe she's just a faster filly than the rest of these and wins anyway, but it's kind of tough to get enthused over a program favorite trying to do something that he or she has never done before, run long against winners.
Now, you're right. Now, what interesting on in both of the two-year-old races on the dirt, what is your take on, there's not a New York trainer in either one of those.
It's very interesting. There's not, but there is a New York winner, and
well,
in the juvenile fillies, number 7, Wicked Whisper.
Wicked Whisper.
She went gate to wire in the Frisette. The Frisette has been the most productive prep race for Breeders' Cup juvenile fillies in the history of the Breeders' Cup. 12 horses have won the Breeders' Cup juvenile fillies coming out of the Frisette. That's more than the Oak Leaf, more than the Alcibiades, more than any other prep. And Wicked Whisper, she dominated the race. She pulled like Jaywalk last year, I believe, won the Frisette, if I'm not mistaken, and came back and won the Breeders' Cup. So Wicked Whisper, she's from New York, or she raced in New York, I should say. She came out here early enough to get her last few workouts over the track for Steve Asmussen, who always ships in early to Santa Anita. This is a good filly, and she's getting better. She's the second choice on the morning line. I picked her second, and she's not giving away any secrets here. But, no New York-based trainer, but a Midwest-based trainer with a filly who raced in New York. And Wicked Whisper, to me, is super alive in that race.
Yeah, no, all the winners from the races in New York are here. I just meant that a New York-based trainer was not here, and I totally agree with you. And let's... remind, like, Steve Asmussen, this isn't his first go-round, obviously. Guys like that don't win, you know, whatever, 10,000 races by not doing the small things. And he's come out before, when the race was at Del Mar, the Breeders' Cup was at Del Mar, he had Gunrunner, and I remember him stopping me at Saratoga, said, I'm coming to Santa Anita, and he shipped out early. He just wanted to be out here in the climate and everything else. And, smart move. So he knows what he's doing. And a couple other guys, I think, have tailed along this time.
Well, and that whole aspect was an outgrowth, Hammer, of that season when he brought a string out here. He sent Scott Blasi out, and they struggled mightily. And I think they took a lot of learning from that experience. And subsequently, remember that, Brad? How long ago? Five years ago?
No, it was about...
It was longer than that. Still had synthetic at Santa Anita.
No, I don't believe so.
It was after the switchback.
They came out. They came out for a good two full years,
and they got their brains beat.
Man, you know what? They
struggled.
McLean's Music came out of here. Brandon to Bob. I mean, who was saying that their horses ran well? I think, 2 year old wise, maybe, or turning three, you know, they didn't win as many races as expected. And then they came back here with a little bit better, stock and the younger horses didn't do as well because, Bob was on a roll then, but, overall they did just fine. And, Scott's very familiar out here with what's going on. And just the climate's different. The way things are done are different. So it gets the horses in that mode. So he'll have some happy horses when they load in the gate for sure, in the next couple of days.
Brad Free with us. Brad, let's go to Saturday. And the early pick five has got the three, it's got the, what, the Damascus, and you've got the Twilight Derby and the Ken Matty. Give everybody a pick three to get things going to lead them into the Philly and Mare Sprint and the Turf Sprint, the early pick five.
Well, the Saturday program starts early at 10:07 in the morning, and the first race on the card is 5.5 furlongs on grass. And I'm just going to editorialize here for a minute. I can't stand these turf sprints on the flat at Santa Anita.
Thank you.
One of the most beautiful aspects of racing in Arcadia since this track opened, since they put the downhill turf course in, whenever that was, has been the downhill turf course. It's a magnificent race that brings together sprinters and milers, both with equal chances on a sweeping, gorgeous, beautiful, in my opinion, safe course. Now, we had a breakdown early this year when Santa Anita was under the microscope, and still is under the microscope, by the way. Horse by the name of Arms Runner broke down, fatal breakdown, and Santa Anita decided to abandon the downhill turf sprints. To me, it was a huge mistake. I don't think that the downhill turf, I believe that that downhill turf course is safe. I love watching these races. These 5-furlong grass chaos sprints and 5.5-furlong chaotic sprints, to me, are an embarrassment. And with these 5.5-furlong races, they start on the dirt. Every single race, somebody stumbles. These are grass horses being asked to leave the gate on a dirt footing. And it's very difficult to me to back these 5.5-furlong grass races that start on dirt with any confidence at all. So I'll get off my soapbox and say that I like a shipper by the name of Escapade. She was compromised by the pace scenario last time out from an inside post at Laurel. She took heat every step, and she got tired. Now she's drawn outside. She has a stalking, pressing style. And if she doesn't stumble on the dirt, I think that she's good enough to defeat this field. Number 8, Girls Know Best, is the favorite at 9-5. I don't like her that much. I mean, she's got speed, but so does number 3, Kenton Road. I just see number 9, Escapade, falling into a perfect trip, sitting third or fourth behind the speed, and I like her to win the Ken Matty, race number 1. Race number 2, it kind of looks like a two-horse race between Flagstaff, who finished third in the Santa Anita Sprint Championship, won by Omaha Beach, and Comebacker Roadster. Very tough to separate the two. Flagstaff obviously has the recent current form and is a bona fide sprinter. Roadster, he won the Santa Anita Derby. He's got a touch of class, and he's been training well. So it's a small field, and the two favorites kind of look like they stand out. So if you're playing to pick 3, you're going to have to get a price somewhere. I was a little surprised to see in race 3, the Twilight Derby, number 8, Neptune Storm at 4-1, which is great, and maybe he will be. It's a big field of 11. Trainer Richard Baltus took blinkers off this colt last time out. He's a gelding, actually. And not only did the horse run well last time out, what he really did was run to his workouts. Because when Baltus took the blinkers off, Neptune Storm started working from behind horses, finishing with run and being a lot more settled in workouts and then again in the race. They went slow early last time out in the Hill Prints, 50.4.5, and Neptune Storm was perfectly content to sit second behind that slow pace. He's going to get a great trip on Saturday because there's not a whole lot of speed in this field at all. In fact, there's only really one other speed horse, and that's number 9, Kingly. So Kingly goes to the lead, Neptune Storm sits second. To me, it looks like a parade, and I have nothing but respect for Noldy, who's the morning line favorite and won the Del Mar Derby, but he's going to have to come from out of it in a race that should unfold at a relatively soft tempo. I like the two speeds, Neptune Storm chasing Kingly in race number 3 on Saturday.
It's a fun group, too, Noldy There's a couple of others. How about Gray Magician moving to the grass for Peter Miller, who you know is just always dangerous. You got to look 3 times. And Gray Magician, in this funny 3-year-old crop, what a nice useful horse he's been, and he's shipped all over like a knight on a chessboard.
He's like the junior Mr. Money.
And if you're looking at Thoroughgraph numbers, I mean, Gray Magician's the fastest horse in the race.
Yes.
The drawback, obviously, is that all those numbers were earned on dirt, and he's going to grass. So, he's got to look as well, and he should be within striking range of what I believe is going to be a relatively modest tempo.
Don't forget this outside horse, Henley's Joy, Michael Maker.
You know what, Hammer? There's a field of 13, actually.
I'm sorry. I didn't turn the page. Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. How about the 11 horse? Goody. Snuck in there. Perfect.
Right.
That's great. I'm actually very well organized.
You'd be surprised. He's not working off of an overnight as like usual.
I got my.
He's got actual PPs.
I have access now to notebooks and three hole punches and things like that. You know, at the school, so I'm very well organized here. Except I didn't turn the page. But Henley's Joy from Bloom Racing, who we know, but
could be a very big weekend. Obviously, with later on, he's got Snapper Sinclair in the Dirt Mile. He's got obviously Midnight Bisou in the Distaff. Brad, let me get to the Philly-Amir Sprint because I want your, California and circuit expertise. The storyline obviously is Covfefe coming in, drawing the rail, one of two important favorites that drew inside. There's a host of West Coast players in here that are going to be square prices. Bellafina on the turn back, Selcourt, who's been somewhat enigmatic. Here's Peter Miller with the outside open air box where the air is fresh and clear. The Marty McGee post, and then Lady Ninja, Richard Baltus, who is just the warlock. I look at Baltus' horses four times to try to see if I can use them.
Well, you have to, because he wins a lot of races, and his horses are always well-prepared and in the right spots. And Lady Ninja, Danusa's My Girl, Selcourt, these are good California Billy Mare sprinters. I think, suspect anyway, that they're probably a notch below the shippers such as Covfefe and Come Dancing. But both those two shippers from out of town face pretty tall order. Covfefe, okay, she drew the rail. It's not the greatest spot to be in, but from a statistical standpoint, it's not the end of the world. The last 5 years at Santa Anita in 7-furlong races, the rail has produced 13% winners of 7-furlong races. It's right in line with every other post position. Here's what bugs me about Covfefe, and it's more of a historical stat. Three-year-olds have habitually underperformed in the Philly Mare Sprint. Last year's three-year-old winner, was it last year or the year before, was the very first one. And specifically, test winners have been horrible in the Philly Mare Sprint. It's a race that typically goes through the older fillies and mares. So Covfefe drew the rail. She's a three. By the way, we've had 8 test winners run in the Philly Mare Sprint. 4 favorites, 0 wins, and only 1 even hit the board. So Covfefe down inside, shipping in with a historical, I think, a defect. A 3-year-old filly facing older. Now, if she runs to the 107 buyer, it's over, and she wins for fun. And as for Come Dancing, she's a New York-based filly who's compiled an outstanding record, 8-for-13 in her career. She's terrific in those 5-horse fields back at Belmont and Saratoga. That's where she's been running in small fields. Now, she was actually favored against Midnight Bisou, which goes to show you the reputation that she has. But Come Dancing is racing outside New York for the first time in her career. I could be wrong, but I'm going to be taking a stand against low odds shippers into Santa Anita that are not familiar with this deep, heavy, slow surface. So if you're going to knock Covfefe and Come Dancing, 2-1 and 5-2, who do you like? I like the filly on the outside, Spice Perfection. We know that she likes Santa Anita. She's drawn well. Her comeback win in the TCA was terrific. She had every right to lose the race after a bad stumble at the break. It's Peter Miller, and if she can run two alike, and that's my one concern because she ran so huge in her comeback, if she can run two alike, I think she is the right horse. Lady Ninja will be running late. And Selcourt, she likes the track. 7 furlongs is a big stretch for her. but I think she's the speed of the speed. This is one of those head-scratching types of races that where if the favorite wins, I'm going to lose.
I totally agree with this, and I found myself as I wrote up the races, wrote up the Friday card, and started to make decisions about Saturday. I came along the same, the same conclusions. That test winner statistic, Brad, obviously, considering that it took until Shamrock Rose's stunning upset last year for a 3-year-old filly to win this race. When you think about a horse like Unique Bella, if that 3-year-old wasn't going to win, and let's be honest, Shamrock Rose, it was a fairly miraculous trip that even got her up. And so, we might still have a no 3-year-old winner ever of this race under slightly different circumstances from last year. So I can understand being against Covfefe for any number of reasons. We got to move to another turf sprint. Hammer, hold on, Hammer. Yeah.
One more reason. Yep. Maybe you mentioned it while I was giving Barbara over here a hug. No horse is wired in 12 editions. No horse has gone wire to wire in the Philly Marathon.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Saturday,
because Selcourt at 7 furlongs is that's going to be a reach for her. I think she's the quickest in the field. If she could wire the field, but that would be a first for this race.
And this race is placed differently in the series. I remember because at Del Mar, it was right before the sprint. I remember because I had the all button there. It was one of my best all buttons when John Kimmel's horse won, because I remember the sprint was second because Roy H. completed it. And so it's a little different here. It's starting off the sequence. So just throwing that out. But it's I can't agree with you more, Brad, as far as looking. Of the two, I'm a come dancing guy.
Right.
I had to pick one between one of the other two. But, I'm going to dig deep here and try and find a little upset. You mentioned Spice Perfection, too. The forgotten horse. He wins a 4-1, a 5-1, wins a grade one, comes back at 4-1, 4.5-1, wins a grade one. Oh, and by the way, comes back last time and wins at 4-1. So the forgotten filly on the outside, all she does is win. So I agree with you. She's going to be a square prize.
Yep.
The race after the Philly and Mare sprint, we go to the turf sprint, and turf sprinter Sheki Shabazz was just out in front of us having all kinds of issues, and there were some headgear problems, and I'm wondering if the bit somehow Sheki Shabazz literally got the bit out of his mouth, and they were playing around, now they're getting Sheki Shabazz back after the morning. I don't know. Did he actually work at all? Did he gallop at all?
Did not see.
I couldn't tell. You'll be watch for that story. I'm sure there'll be some either a DRF live note or a little something. Speaking of the turf sprint, here we are, Brad. 5 furlongs. I echo your sentiments about the downhill course. What's your thought and how to approach this? There doesn't seem to be a ton of need the lead types in here.
Yeah, there's horses that are tactical and versatile and can be forwardly placed. You're right, and that's one of the things about a turf sprint as opposed to a dirt sprint. With a dirt sprint, they go pedal to the metal, from the time the gates open. That's not always the case in a turf sprint. Turf sprinters, it seems to me, just speaking anecdotally, that they are able to ration their speed a little bit more. I used to see it all the time on the downhill. You see two horses with speed, you think they're going to hook up, and they never did. One went to the lead, the other was comfortable sitting second. So pace duels do not unfold in grass sprints, I believe, as often as they do in dirt sprints. Sheki Shabazz will be up there forwardly placed, a definite contender, much improved on grass. To me, the horse to beat is number 10, Eddie Haskell. He's an absolute pro at this short 5-furlong distance. He finished second last time out in the grade 2 Eddie D. And one of the things I don't like about these 5-furlong grass sprints is I don't think the best horse necessarily has the best chance. 6.5 down the hill, you could be fairly confident the best horse was going to win most of the time. That does not happen at 5 furlongs on grass, and it did not happen last time out when Eddie Haskell, breaking from the rail, got shuffled back, completely out of position, had to circle wide, finished well, beaten a half length behind Pee Wee Reese, who got the all-time gorgeous ground-saving trip and cut the corner. But Eddie Haskell was best that day in the Grade 2 Eddie D. Now he's drawn outside. Rosario has been on him over this course again, and he's the horse to beat. He's the tepid 9-2 favorite on the morning line. I made him 4-1 in daily racing form. He should be that price in a 12-horse field. 14 entered, 12 can go. But Eddie Haskell, he's tactical, versatile, loves the course, in top form. To me, he's absolutely the horse to beat.
I would love to see Mark Latt win one of these.
Wouldn't that be great? I echo your sentiments, Brad, times 10 on the distance layout. Santa Anita was not built for 5/8 on the turf.
No, no.
The racetrack is not built for that. And as we sit here live, as you do every day, and we've all seen it, you just look up at that hill, and that's what makes this place.
That's what makes this place special. It's those mountains in the background, and it's like 6.5 down the hill. It's a gorgeous race course that I hope one day we return to.
Yeah, I do, too. I do, too. Yep. So, just the race itself, I don't care where it's run, I'm not a fan of. A little different at Belmont type of thing when the sweeping turns and all this paperclip type turn, like you said, does not necessarily let the best horse do what he can do. And the price on Eddie Haskell is pretty nice, but I'm still going to dig deep in here, and I'm not sure yet. I like the Rusty Arnold horses a little bit, but we'll see.
How about Steve's favorite horse, Ohm? Tough beat stories of all time.
It's unbelievable.
Obviously.
It's unbelievable.
I think this horse is live at a big number. Ohm, he's training super for Peter Miller. Peter Miller, he's pretty good at turf sprints, and I think that he's got Ohm cranked for a top effort, first start back. I don't know about the 5/8 for him, but at 15-1 or 20-1 in that neighborhood, this 7-year-old's going to run a big race. Maybe he'll get there, maybe he won't, but I'm not going to let him slip through the cracks at a big, big number, number 11, Ohm.
I agree. Now, I say obviously because, not obviously, but that's the horse that beat him by a nose in this race
That's right.
A couple of years ago.
Speaking of Peter Miller, a horse came up last night, Brad, with Marcus Hirsch. Marcus is picking Belvoir Bay, and Gary Barber really poised potentially for a mammoth weekend, got Stormy, Yoshida, and he dots the ownership lines both days, and Belvoir Bay, as interesting a participant in this race as anybody.
Well, absolutely she is. And, you know, filly mare sprinters can hold their own against, colts and gelding sprinters. And Belvoir Bay, she already showed that when she finished second in a Group 1 in Dubai back in March. I wish I knew how she was training. I wish I knew how she was doing. But all of her workout and her preparation has been done at San Luis Rey Downs. Now, she's a sprinter coming off a layoff, so you don't necessarily need a 4-month pattern of workouts. It almost looks like it's a little bit of an abbreviated preparation with regards to her workout pattern. But again, they're only going 5/8. She's drawn outside. I'm not sure I don't know what kind of trip she can possibly get. She does have tactical speed. She can be close. She can come from a little bit off. I wouldn't talk anybody off her at a big number. I just don't know how she's doing. To me, she's kind of one of those question mark horses that can go either way.
Brad Free with us, we've given you the full weekend treatment. And, Brad, before we go, obviously, we got to get a couple of opinions on some of the main track Saturday races that everybody anticipates the most, the sprint, the distaff, and the classic. I know you made Circus Maximus your bet of the day in the mile, and you can maybe touch on that, but go to the old school specials, classic, distaff, sprint.
Well, let's start with the sprint. I think that Steve Asmussen has a very, very good horse in Matoli. He's trained super over the racetrack. He'll have his work cut out with Chancelot and Imperial Hint and even Catalina Cruiser, but I like the favorite in the sprint. I think Matoli is poised to deliver a top effort and enter the Horse of the Year conversation. I'm not sure when the last time a pure sprinter was actually in that conversation. But I like Mattioli. He's the favorite, big deal. The Classic is one of a handful of races on the Breeders' Cup program, Friday and Saturday, that it's just very difficult to formulate, at least for myself, a legitimate, you know, unique, solid opinion. I ended up with McKenzie in the Classic just because I think he's the best horse, and I believe that the strategy that they are going to employ, and I'm kind of speculating on that, I think that the strategy is going to be take the racetrack, make the lead, and try to wire the field. So I picked McKenzie, but I'm also a little bit intrigued with Yoshida coming from Out of the Clouds, and maybe he'll be a little bit of a price. So McKenzie, a tepid selection. Now, the last time that we talked on this show, guys, I said that the one post position I don't want Paradise Woods to draw was the rail. Lo and behold, she drew the rail. It compromises her chances. There's no doubt about it. Everyone knows who the favorite is. Midnight Bisou is spectacular. 7-for-7 this year, training well the entire month over the surface. I think there's some good horses in here that are capable of defeating Midnight Bisou if they fire. Now, with Paradise Woods drawing the inside, it certainly makes it a lot more difficult. But there's a couple of speed horses to the outside that might clear her early. I'm referring to Serengeti Empress and Mo C. Cow. And I think that Abel Sadio, going into the first turn, will have the opportunity to get Paradise Woods to the outside. And if that happens, she'll be in front of Midnight Bisou. She potentially could fall into a dream trip, third on the outside behind the aforementioned front runners. And if she can deliver the same effort that she did last time at the Zenyatta, and John Sheriff, her trainer, is confident that she can. She came out of the Zenyatta in top form, has trained well since then. I think that Paradise Woods is good enough to defeat Midnight Bisou in the distaff. And even though the rail poses a huge challenge for a filly who does not like the inside, I'm going to be stubborn and take Paradise Woods at 5-1 in an upset in the Breeders' Cup distaff.
I like it, and I agree that that she could get early established position and then find the perfect stalking spot, as long as she doesn't get too anxious and too upset about having horses in front of her and maybe some kickback. I agree. I think she's the right option if you want to take a stand. You don't even have to take a stand. In the multis, you certainly can use more than her and Midnight Bisou. I hear a lot of sort of nattering that Dunbar Road, something of a now filly that people seem to have latched onto. Brad, Circus Maximus, your best bet of the day on Saturday, opting for the import that is going to have to beat some very solid milers, both domestic players and other international participants.
There are a couple of pretty good fillies and mares in there, Got Stormy and Uni. They're both good. The funny thing about the mile this year, the pace scenario looks like it's going to come up a little bit on the soft side, and Circus Maximus has enough speed to be forwardly placed. I think that the grass horses in Europe are often better than they are in North America. This horse wants firm ground. He's going to get it. He's the 3-1 favorite, so it's not that creative. But I think that Circus Maximus will have a tactical advantage over the fillies, and I think, to me, he's the most probable winner on the Breeders' Cup program anyway on Saturday.
And finally, I got to ask you, because I just looked at the selection grid at DRF.com, and Baffert seems very high on Improbable after the most recent preparation, and yet he is winless. He's without a placement. He's without a show horse in 8 tries in this race. What makes it different on Saturday for Baffert and Improbable?
Well, first of all, Improbable is a good horse. He won a grade one in the third start of his career. When Omaha Beach defeated him back at Oaklawn in April, Omaha Beach toyed with Improbable. It was a one-length margin that visually probably could have been 5 lengths. It's entirely possible that Omaha Beach is simply a better horse than Improbable. However, The most recent start by Improbable, to me, I think it disguises his form a little bit and is one reason why we might get a little bit of a price. He broke slowly, as he often does, and he was caught down inside on a dead rail at Parks. He laid an egg at 6-5. I think he had excuses. Since returning to California, this horse is trained very, very well. When Baffert talks horses up, they generally deliver. And I expect Improbable, if he breaks, and he usually does break okay when he's running out of his own stall at Santa Anita or Los Alamitos or wherever it is in California, Improbable, if he breaks, he'll be up there close. Omaha Beach, this is a short price on a horse who ran out of his mind in his comeback and now is stretching out to two turns, second start back. And I don't like to use the term bounce because I don't probably understand it as well as other people do, but maybe there's a little bit of regression imminent for Omaha Beach. Improbable is going to move forward. He'll move up off of his most recent start, and I picked him to win the race, and I think that he might be worth betting on. John White made him 3-1. I thought he'd be a little bit higher. Maybe I'm wrong, but I like Improbable to win the Dirt Mile. He's training extremely well. 1 mile is an ideal trip for a colt who is 1-for-1 at Santa Anita.
Now, Brad, I can't thank you enough for this thorough examination of the weekend. Best of luck. Any final advice for players approaching the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think you necessarily have to get caught up in all these multi-race exotics. Sometimes we go chasing after a giant trifecta or superfecta or pick five or pick six, and we let a 20-1 shot, you know, slip through the cracks. So I would suggest, and this is, it's always a personal decision, wagering strategy, but I'm probably just going to go race by race and be conservative as far as I'll make some place bets in some of these big fields if the price is right. So I would go race by race. Don't get all your money tied up into a multi-race sequence where if you happen to be wrong once, you're out of the whole picture. So, yeah, race by race for me.
I agree. Take a step back, and instead of going for the fives and the fours, I've reduced to the threes, pick threes, yeah. I mean. But don't let, like you said, the 20-1 shot that you've loved all week, and your buddy goes, "Oh, you must have crushed it." I didn't hit it.
No,
but,
I missed the next leg.
I missed the next leg. Yeah, exactly. Now, I do think that you do need to take a shot at one of these pick fours or pick fives. So what I've learned over the years is, you know, don't put a little into a couple of them. Find one you like and go for it. If you normally bet $50, put 200 in it. Play it to win. Don't just kind of skitter around three or four of them and hope I get lucky. Go all in on one of them because that's all you need, as you know, and then, you know, move around. But you learn over the years, these big days, you just take a little hold because, like you said, Brad, all you need is that one shot. Boom. Bingo. Yep. I'm out and you know, it keeps you going. So, anyway, Brad. So I miss Brad. I miss his analysis. And just talking horses. So we'll see you out here in the next couple of days. Be looking forward to it.
I look forward to it, Hammer. I wish you were still in your office downstairs and we could hang out a little bit more together. But anyway, times change, and we're looking forward to the weekend. So I look forward to seeing you guys out there.
Brad Free, everybody, the longtime Southern California lead handicapper and also the author of Handicapping 101, a terrific introductory handicapping book. For those of you just getting involved in the game, Brad Free 1 on Twitter, and just always a pleasure and a great way to get everybody, giving them a template to approach the weekend. We're going to stay right here, no break, and